To my beloved spiritual master, today is His Appearance Day, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.10. His Grace, if you're young, we'll do the Sanskrit and word for word. Thank you.
Sa samrat kasya vaheto.
Sa samrat kasya vaheto.
Pandunam manavardhanah. Prayopavishto Gangaya.
Prayopavishto Gangaya.
Anabritya Tirachyam.
Anabritya Tirachyam.
Sasamrat Kasya Vaheto.
Sasamrat Kasya Vaheto.
Pandunam Manavardhana.
Pandunam Manavardhana.
Prayopavishto Gangaya.
Prayopavishto Gangaya.
Nadritya Dirachyam.
Nadritya Dirachyam.
Sasamrakasya Vahito.
Sasamrakasya Vahito.
Pandunam Manavardhana.
Pandunam Manavardhana.
Prayopavishto Gangaya.
Prayopavishto Gangaya.
Sa he samrat, the emperor. Kasya, for what? Va,
for
heto,
reason.
Pandunam,
Pandunam,
of the sons of Pandu.
Manavardhanaha,
of one who riches the family.
One who enriches the family.
Praya upavishtaha. Sitting and fasting.
Sitting and fasting.
Gangayam.
Gangayam.
The bank of the Ganges.
On the bank of the Ganges.
Anadritya.
Anadritya.
Neglecting.
Neglecting.
Arirat.
Arirat.
Acquired kingdom.
Acquired kingdom.
Sriyam.
Sriyam.
Opulence.
Opulence. Prabhupada, could you read, before I do the translation in the first verse, read 1411, the next one, just the Sanskrit on it. Appreciate it.
Namanti yathāda niketam atmanā
Namanti yathāda niketam atmanā
Shivāya haniya dhanāni satrava
Shivāya haniya dhanāni satrava
Katam savira shriyamanga dushyajā
Katam savira shriyamanga dushyajā
Vivaisa torastrum mahosaha suvi
Vivaisa torastrum mahosaha suvi
Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam 1410. He was a translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Srila Prabhupada. He was a great emperor and possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Purport, by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Parikshit was the emperor of the world and all the seas and oceans, and he did not have to take the trouble to acquire such a kingdom by his own effort. He inherited it from his grandfather, Maharaj Yudhisthira, and brothers. Besides that, he was doing well in the administration and was worthy of the good names of his forefathers. Consequently, there was nothing undesirable in his opulence and administration. Then why should he give up all these favorable circumstances and sit down on the bank of the Ganges fasting till death? This is astonishing, and therefore all were eager to know the cause. Okay, so Maharaj Parikshit was a great personality. And great personalities always have they always are in the service mood. Every action that they perform is based on service to, like in his case, his kingdom and to the Supreme Lord. So everything that they do is just so wonderful. And for us, we're trying to aspire to be this way. So I want to read Canto 1, 12, 27, the purport on that. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. I'll just do the purport because it relates to what I have to say. Srila Sukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul, and thus he remained always alert not to be trapped by the illusory energy. In the Bhagavad Gita, this alertness is very lucidly explained. The liberated soul and the conditioned souls have different engagements. The liberated soul is always engaged in the progressive path of spiritual attainment, which is something like a dream for a conditioned soul. The conditioned soul cannot imagine the actual engagements of the liberated soul. While the conditioned soul thus dreams about spiritual engagements, the liberated soul is awake. Similarly, the engagement of a conditioned soul appears to be a dream for a liberated soul. A conditioned soul and a liberated soul may apparently be on the same platform, but factually they are differently engaged, and their attention is always alert, either in sense enjoyment or in self-realization. The conditioned soul is absorbed in matter, whereas the liberated soul is completely indifferent to matter. This indifference is explained as follows. So I felt that that purport relates to some of the activities of Maharaj. These great personalities, they're always interested in the welfare of their constituents. So I'm going to read translation to 1:12:27. After hearing about his death, which will be caused by the bite of a snake bird, sent by son of a brahmana, he will get himself freed from all material attachment and surrender unto the personality of Godhead, taking shelter of him. Purport. Material attachments and taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord go ill together. Material attachments means ignorance of transcendental happiness under the shelter of the Lord. Devotional service to the Lord while existing in the material world is a way to practice one's transcendental relation with the Lord, and which it is and when it is matured, one gets completely free from all material attachments and becomes competent to go back home, back to Godhead. Maharaj Parikshit, being especially attached to the Lord from the beginning of his body in the womb of his mother, was continuously under the shelter of the Lord, and the so-called warning of his death within 7 days from the bite, from the date of the curse by the brahmana son, was a boon to him to enable him to prepare himself to go back home, back to Godhead. Since he was always protected by the Lord, he could have avoided the effect of such a curse. By the grace of the Lord, but he did not take such undue advantage for nothing. Rather, he made the best use of a bad bargain. For 7 days continuously, he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from the right source, and thus he got the shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord by that opportunity. So, these great leaders, we must understand that they're very much on a in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Lord. These are direct agents of the Lord. And so, in terms of our understanding of the of a leader like Maharaj Parikshit, we cannot even we don't have anybody these days that is comparable, even remotely comparable to Maharaj Parikshit. So, and quite often we have people who are so enthused, oh, the economy is doing well and we must be doing good. So this is not a very good proposition. Economy, it doesn't matter anything about the economy, because if the leaders are sending the people to hell, this is not very good. So these great leaders, they set such a good example by being the example. And by being the example, the citizens benefit, and Lord Krishna's plan is implemented, and it's just a wonderful situation. So I'm going to go to the next verse. Translation. He was such a great emperor that all his enemies would come and bow down at his feet and surrender all their wealth for their own benefit. He was full of youth and strength, and he possessed kingly opulences that were difficult to give up. Why did he want to give up everything, including his life? Purport. There was nothing undesirable in his life. He was quite a young man and could enjoy life with power and opulence. So there was no question of retiring from active life. There was no difficulty in collecting the state taxes because he was so powerful and chivalrous that even his enemies would come to him and bow down at his feet and surrender all their wealth for their own benefit. Maharaj Parikshit was a pious king. He conquered his enemies, and therefore the kingdom was full of prosperity. There was enough milk, grains, and meadows, and all the rivers and mountains were full of potency. So materially, everything was satisfactory. Therefore, there was no question of untimely giving up his kingdom. The sages were eager to hear about all this. So, once again, these leaders, great leaders, are making such a good example. So, today we have, in today's world, we have an illusion, especially people in this country, and probably other countries too, there's an illusion of prosperity at the expense of other people, at the expense of Mother Earth, killing animals for food, pollution, intoxicating the cities, degrading the women. This is the materialist goal, is to, unfortunately, to engage the people and send them to hell. So Maharaj Parikshit was a very empowered leader by Krishna, and he was a living example of the Vedic teachings. So this is what we aspire for, is to become a living example of the Vedic teachings. I want to mention one thing. My brother-in-law is in Vrindavan. He lives there now. He moved there. And he was telling me that quite a few devotees he runs into, they praise ISKCON Alachua. Actually, he said a lot of devotees from all over the world, they praise ISKCON Alachua. And one of the reasons why, he said, because of ISKCON Alachua's innovative preaching and innovative leadership. So I felt, I'm so glad I'm here. And so it's very nice. And I want to welcome Prana Govinda back. It's good to see a home devotee doing, being a good example for all of us to follow. So anyway, there was one thing that we should understand, and when I say we, I don't mean in a condescending way, I mean that I'm trying to understand myself, is that there is very important connections with these great personalities. And they will guide us. Sometimes I reflect on my own devotion or so-called devotion, and I'm thinking, I say, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And this is sort of This is a sort of a, like a mind attack, like the introduction this morning. We're having these mind attacks all the time. And so when we plug into, especially the Holy Name, and we plug into these great personalities, then they can help us get through this stuff. And I'll speak for myself, but for book distributors, especially, it's sometimes a risk. It is risky. And it's risk. And sometimes you disturb some of these people, these demons, I guess. And peculiar things happen. And sometimes these things happen. It's good to disturb them anyway. So, but sometimes these things happen, and it's Maya's way of discouraging you. So, but we have to, when we plug back into what our what Prabhupada wants and what Lord Chaitanya wants, then we persevere and we continue in our devotional activities, regardless of whatever happens. So I'm going to stop there on that. Today is the appearance day of my beloved spiritual master, Bhakti Tirtha Swami. So I want to, first of all, one of the things that Maharaj used to tell us all the time, he says, it's all right with adoration and distinction and all that. I remember one room conversation, Maharaj, this one mother, she asked Maharaj, she said, Maharaj, when you go, this is when he was leaving his body. She said, when you go, what are we going to do? And Maharaj severely chastised her, severely, on the spot. He told her, it's not me. We're just following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, his spiritual master. So we don't want to get into a fanatical or a movie star type of mindset. The Vedic teachings is given to us so we can live it and become an example for other people. So I'm going to read from the Beggar 1, Meditation and Prayers on the Supreme Lord. This one I'm getting ready to read now, it was very emotional for me, so I hope I can get through this without crying or anything like that. This is very emotional. Maharaj was a very intense person, and his when I first read this, I didn't get what I got out of it recently, so hopefully that's good. Okay, so this is Meditation 4. Dear Lord, where were you? There was a Holocaust where over 6 million people were massacred. Innocent men, helpless women, loving children. Many died, hated you. Some ignored you, others prayed to you. For the first time in their lives, some turned to you in distress. There was others who had made a daily practice of intensely calling on your name. However, they were slaughtered during Hitler's regime. Dear Lord, where were you? Some people were on their knees praying before they slept. Some were at the dinner table asking for your blessings. Some were being trained to serve you as teachers or preachers. Others were simply moving about, madly engaged in all types of sense gratification. All of them, those who worshiped you and those who tried to avoid you, were bombed at Hiroshima. Dear Lord, where were you? There were millions of babies with swollen stomachs, their mothers and fathers so weak that if someone gave them a shovel to work for food, they would still starve because they had not the strength to do anything. These children, women, and men all died of starvation in Ethiopia. Dear Lord, where were you? People thought the world was ending. Everyone knew many people who had died. Death was in every family. There was great difficulty in discarding all the corpses. In 14th century Europe, at the time of the Black Plague, over one-third of the people on this planet died. One-third. Dear Lord, where were you? They were living communally in peace, kind to nature. They were friends to the animals and respectful to the demigods. They were more than 10 million strong. And although they live in the richest country, they are some of the poorest and most maltreated people, robbed of their land, massacred, and put on reservations. They are slowly dying off, dwindling in numbers. Their future does not look much better, as they have the highest child mortality rate in the developed world. These millions of Indians who call to you as they put on their war paint to defend themselves, lost their lives, their land, their future. Dear Lord, where were you? Thousands of innocent people died. Many will die tomorrow or the next day or next week. Many did not die immediately, have wished or will wish they did, as they will suffer tremendously for the rest of their lives. Those poor people in India who died in the chemical disaster of Bhopal, some of them were visiting the temples every day. Many were expert at praying for protection. However, neither they nor their loved ones were protected. Dear Lord, where were you? Over 90 million people were taken from their families, chained like animals, and forced on the boats where most died in transit. Those who did not die on the boats would later wish they had, as they would never again see their families or country. Their wives were at the will of the slave masters, and their children would grow up in an atmosphere of hate. Angry with the world, having little awareness of their heritage. Having little awareness of their heritage. One second. Angry with the world, having little awareness of their heritage and seemingly free from their slavery, they remained second-class citizens in a country made rich from their bondage. These slaves kidnapped from Africa These slaves kidnapped from Africa were praying before being captured as they were sold and as they died. Dear Lord, where were you? 640 million people fought for 18 days under your order, except for five people, every single person was killed. Friends fought friends, students fought teachers, and relatives looked in each other's eyes as they struck death blows. This battle of Kurukshetra was even considered to be a religious war. And dear Lord, you were there. You have said, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but he attains my eternal abode. Bhagavad Gita 4:9. So, you have explained how this material world is a place of repeated birth and death, and there's no place for a gentleman. There are always massive miseries, and the suffering is always intense. We are given free will by which to elevate ourselves and others, or to degrade ourselves and inflict cruelty on mankind. My dear Lord, the pain and suffering of man's inhumanity to man in this world are devastating. There is no love, happiness, or security outside of you. Those who are truly surrendered to you know nothing but you, and you know nothing but them. You are always around, accessible, and ready to bring us out of this world of such gross miseries and limitations. Please snatch me up and allow me to be a transcendental servant who is fixed in neither happiness or distress. Excuse me. You have told us how, this is the part that's most important, I think. You have told us how in this material world there's danger at every step, and unless we take full shelter of you, our lives will be a failure. The question is not where was you, but where were we? How are we using our free will, my Lord? In seeing how often we abuse our free will, I am today saying, be gone, free will. I beg you, force me fully to serve you properly before it's too late. Now I understand, Lord, you were always there and available. Only we are lacking. This is Maharaj's mood, Dr. Tipton's mood coming through these writings. And so, I have one more. It's not so emotional. And I would, if anyone doesn't have this book, The Beggar, please get a hold of one. These meditations are very intense by Gurudev. A confession to the Divine Mother. Dear Mother, I'm very frightened and often bitten by the snake of Maya. Do not fear, my child. Your father is protecting you. Dear Mother, I am lonely and often bored. Do not fear, my child. Your father is sending you association. Dear Mother, I'm so inconsiderate. I'm unable to avoid offending the great Vaishnavas. Do not worry, my child. Your father will encourage them to forgive you. Dear Mother, there's such emptiness and impersonalism in this world. Do not worry, my child. Your father has arranged many exciting adventures for you. Dear Mother, I'm so ashamed of my mind. Do not worry, my child. Your father has engaged in the most heroic activities simply to capture its attention. Dear Mother, Why am I always sad and complaining? Do not worry, my child. It is that you have forgotten how much your father and mother love you. Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj Ki Jai. Okay, so Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, he was a, I was hoping I wouldn't have to go through that, but anyway, that's a pretty intense, these meditations are pretty intense. So anyway, I'll turn this over to, anybody have any experiences with Bhakti Chaitanya Swami?
Thank you. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj Ki Jai. I had experience with him right after Prabhupada left. Of course, I left. And a couple of months after I had Blue, I was at the Detroit. I went back to my home, so I was at Detroit Temple. And Ghanashyam and Triparai Maharaj came traveling through. And I sat in on the lecture on the Sunday feast, and they... He hadn't seen me for 2 months. And so after the class, Maharaj came down and said, "Hey, Dale, Triparai wants to talk to you." And so I went upstairs into the office with Maharaj and we talked. And they convinced me that I should come back and join their mission. And Maharaj looked at Triparai and said, "Dale, what are you doing?" And I said, I don't know. I mean, you know, I cared for a couple months. And so they convinced me to get on their party with them. So it was me, Triparai Maharaj, Ghanashyam, and Brahmananda Swami, who I never got along with, but that was okay. In all due respect, he was just a bully, but whatever. And but Ghanashyam was completely the opposite, because I'd been out for a couple of months, you know, just totally out of it. And when I came back, you know, the schedule was difficult. So every single morning, and, you know, he was getting up at 3. He would chant 32 rounds in every morning before he served out prasadam. And that was his thing. And he would come and he'd wake me up and say, 15 minutes to Mangal, Div, get up. And I'd go, okay. And I'd go back to sleep. And he'd come back up and he'd say, "Hey, Div, if you get up now, you can chant some japa before Guru Puja." And I'd go, okay, I'm coming, you know, and I'd just go back to sleep. And then he'd come back up and he'd say, "If you get up right now, you can make Guru Puja, and Maharaj is giving class. You can sit in on class." I'm okay. So that was my kind of, he was like dragging me every single day. And our service was to go out and sell sets of books. So we had this list from a magazine, and we had all these addresses and names of people that were into, you know, the magazine was a UFO magazine, but it was a pseudo-spiritual thing. So these people would sign up for literature. So we would go and knock on the door and sell him sets of books. And in the morning, he would eat 3 chapatis, 2 carrots, and a little palm full of dahi. That was what Ghanashyam ate. And I'm not kidding, all day. He didn't eat. So I would eat prasadam there, and we'd go out on Sankirtan. And about 4 hours into our day, he would pull over at a grocery store and say, "Go in there, Div, and get something to eat." And he would just chant japa. I'd get some fruit and yogurt and whatever just to survive. And he would just chant rounds. He was amazing how spiritual he was. He slept about 4 hours a night. And the only thing was I would never let him drive. Because as soon as he drove, he'd go, "I know you didn't chant your round, so you're going to sit and chant, and I'll drive." And like my first round, he'd be falling asleep at the wheel. So I was like, "Look, Ghanashyam, I'm driving, okay?" He just he would read to me, and I would drive. But we'd spend 9 or 10 hours a day out selling sets of books. And it was one of the most intense times of my life as far as... Well, I had Triparai there, and I had Ghanashyam there. And these were like saints, you know, and I'm me. And so, but between those two pulling me along, you know, for those months down there, and it was the St. Louis Temple is where we ended up. But it was... And I always liked him. I knew him earlier. Anyway, his mother lived in Cleveland. And that traveling party that I joined in 73 was from Cleveland. So when I went to the temple there, I met his mother, and he came to visit her. And we got so I knew Ghanashyam from early from 73. Mm-hmm. And he was always He wasn't envious, you know. He didn't care that I was sleeping and I wasn't chanting, but he wanted to help me. And you could feel that. I mean, there was other devotees that would just come by and, like, kick at me, you know, because I was sleeping during the morning program. But Ghanshyam was totally humble and kind, and it made me want to be better, you know. And then I happened to be there when he was leaving his body, too. I didn't plan it, but I was in New Vrindavan, and somebody came down and said, if you don't go right now, you're not going to see him. So I got in the car and went up to the farm and I saw him. He was amazing. And his books are really, really far out books. So thanks for that. I know you had trouble getting through that, but it was it was purifying for you.
Yes. Yes, anybody have any more comments about? And before you go on, this one little story, I hope I won't get in trouble with this. But anyway, about Maharaj driving. For some reason, they had to let him drive one time. And he hit this guy on a bike. And this was in India, I believe it was. And he got arrested. And he had a bail. He got out. He sent a letter to Prabhupada arranged for his bail and whatever mystical things that they do, you know. And he got out. But after that, no driving for
Was the man okay?
Yeah, the man was okay. Yeah, he didn't kill him or hurt him.
Yeah, Maharaj Prabhu, I just want to thank you for, I think you succeeded in bringing His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami into our presence today by His words. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, he was, Tracy, would you like to say something?
I just didn't let him drive. The very same experiences that Divyanga Prabhu was mentioning about living with him and going on Sankirtan with him. This was on the BBT library party. And so, all those things I can relate to very nicely. When he was with us, he would have an apple, maybe some sour cream and nuts, and that was it. And always up before everybody else chanting. And I liked the way he chanted. He kind of like danced and shook. And,
very intense.
Yeah, intense, you know, japa.
In my opportunity, he was always serving up.
And even after he took sannyas, like you said, he never makes you feel, looks down at you or something like that. Even as a sannyasi, he was equal with everyone. He didn't take a position, I'm a sannyasi, you're a brahmachari or something like that, or you're a grihastha. Very accessible.
Like yesterday, we had the Vyasa Puja over Mother Loka's house, and Mother Mukya said something I thought was very interesting. She was saying about serving your spiritual master in separation. When they're on the planet, I guess for some of us, it's more superficial, but after they leave, it's something else. I remember Guru Maharaj, he would tell us, he said, I'm going to come to you in your dreams. I'm going to be able to help you more when I'm gone, you know. And so he never chastised me much, he knew it, I couldn't take it. I can't take it to my chastisement now. But anyway, he knew I couldn't take it. But since he's left, he's really getting on my case.
You're fortunate.
About his own impending death, I was talking to him about that, and he saw it as service, that he felt he could do more service by leaving his body than he could by staying. So that's why he was accepting and embracing death, because in a service mood, like you were mentioning in your class, the great personality, they're in a serving mood. So that's how he was, even with death.
Yeah. And he had a tendency, he's even teaching us how to embrace illnesses as a, because everything happens by Krishna's arrangement. And this one experience I had day before the Vyasa Puja. Sometimes the material energy, we get attacked. So anyway, I had my one of my bank accounts was almost cleared out because of in my ride sharing program, this person came through the ride sharing app and had a real, really elaborate scheme. I mean, it was unbelievable. And so they were imposters saying they were somebody else, and then they were coming through. I was thinking it was the company I was working for and things like that, and it was coming through the app and everything. So anyway, fortunately, Christian arranged for me to not lose anything. Everything worked out. Fortunately, Wells Fargo is a pretty good bank because I don't like to give endorsement, but they were right on top of it and everything worked out. But we have these attacks. I remember this one particular when Maharaj was, he was going to be coronated as a king in one African country. So these were positions. The leader of this particular country was embracing the Vedic teachings, and his members, cabinet members, majority of them were corrupt. And so they tried to influence Bhakti Tirthaswami. They even threatened him. They put a spell on him. And Maharaj talks, and even it talks in the Bhagavatam too, about leaders. They had to be careful. You get psychic attacks, things like this. And so anyway, he was on the way to be coronated as king. This was a ceremonial post. And they put some kind of spell on him, or either they rigged it, it did something to the car. So anyway, he was on the way to the get coronated, and they had a collision. The car turned over, and everything else. One of Maharaj's disciples was hurt, but Maharaj he came out of it. I think he had hurt his thumb or something like that. But anyway, when the coronation was getting ready to start, I guess some of these leaders, they were thinking, okay, well, he's out the picture, he's gone, you know. Then all of a sudden, here comes Maharaj with his big, huge smile, walking up, and they coronated him as king. A ceremonial king. So these, and to this day, over in Africa, he opened a lot of temples over in Africa. His influence in terms of taking the order, what Srila Prabhupada told him. Srila Prabhupada came to him in a dream and told him to go preach in Africa. To this day, it was a couple of months ago. I looked it up, and these temples are still there. You know, in these temples, he's influencing a lot of people, and all over the continent of Africa. And Africa is a difficult place. America is almost coming just like that. But anyway, so as leaders, everybody's a leader. We have to be careful with. We have to have more attentive rounds and just be careful. But so anyway, are there any more remembrances of Bhakti Krishna from yesterday?
Before coming down here, I lived in Nashville, and we had programs at Bodhi's house in Murfreesboro. And I was very fortunate that I was single at the time, and twice he came to Murfreesboro, so I was the one that went and picked him up. So at the airport, and took him from Nashville to Murfreesboro. It's just kind of amazing looking back at it, but there I was sitting in my car with him right next to me. And I was in that situation four times. I was very fortunate to have just him and I talking for, took him from the airport in Nashville to Murfreesboro one time, another time, and also when he came to Murfreesboro, it was just amazing. He gave the talk and the kirtan was just like, I thought we had a temple room which was above a garage. I'm like, this floor is going to break. You know, everybody was just so excited. It was very good. Then another time I took him from Murfreesboro to a program that he did at a TV studio in Nashville. And so I took him there, stayed him back to the studio while he did the interview, then took him back to Murfreesboro. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And going back to this, you know, when devotees, when we go through seemingly reverses, Maharaj taught us, and of course to the Prabhupada and in the literatures that we have, that we embrace adversity sometime, and not blame it on Krishna, you know, because everything happens for our purification. So if we get sick, we just thank you, like Maharaj did, thank you, Krishna, for making me sick. So anyway, Bhakti Tiddha Swami, any more stories about him? Yeah, he was always very intense. And I remember one time when we were in Chicago, there was some people didn't like him there. He would come there every month. I mean, every year to do the they had a big convention center at the McCormick place. And so the management was under one Prabhu. Every time my wife would come there. And I was serving at that temple. It was my first temple. Every time Maharaj would come there, he would conveniently go out of town. And I was like, why did he go out of town? And anytime Maharaj would come, he would have like hundreds of people all over the world be coming there. You know. So anyway, so one time I approached the temple president because he helped me get initiated. And I asked him, I said, why are you out of town all the time when Bhakti Tiddha Swami come? And so he thought about it, and he made up a sort of like an excuse and everything. But he knew that Krishna was arranging for me to bring this to him. So after I brought this to him, the next time Maharaj came, the temple president, he invited him to stay at his house. And they became beautiful, wonderful friends, you know. So that's the importance of us not being on a bodily platform, and just we're all spirit souls. And one thing I try to remember, Maharaj says, he says, if you see people, because a lot of times we're looking at people, and a lot of times we see they're different, you know, whatever we see. But he said, if you see every person as a spirit soul, and we try to constantly do this all the time, every person you see them as a spirit soul, and that spirit soul is connected with Krishna, then we won't be in our mind discriminating. And it's easier said than done, of course. but this is what we should try to do. So thank you. Chalo Bhakti Tirtho Swami Ki. Chalo Bhakti Vedanta Swami Ki. Sriman Bhagavatam Ki.